know what they're looking for. If the framework that they understand is LGBT, but it's not translating to make sense in, say, Ghana or Uganda or Nigeria, how can they be supportive if they what tools can you provide actually in this regard?
I think what I see is work from both sides. Mm. So if you are an ally interested in supporting the colonial work, I believe it is your responsibility to look for people doing the colonial work, number one. And then number two, if you are an activist doing colonial work, decolonial work. Everything I have said is decolonial, sorry. So
strike that from the record.
Let me take it again. If you are an individual, if you are a queer person looking to support decolonial work anywhere, I wanted you to make it your responsibility to find out, you know. And also, if you're an activist doing decolonial work, I think it will be your responsibility to put the work out there. So Mithu found me online through a Google search, if I'm right, or one of the works that I have published. And that was how we connected. If I want to donate to a sex work organization in Kenya, I do that monthly, and I make sure that the money goes to an activist that doesn't work with an NGO, but mobilizes sex workers on the ground, you know. People like that can be fairly difficult to find because, number one, they do not have sometimes the platform, sometimes they do not have the finances. I mean, I know so many queer people doing important work in Ghana. There are organizations, there are collectives that have come together to own apartments and buildings. There are queer people. There are queer people that are actively mobilizing community to, you know, invest in businesses. You don't know them because usually you don't find them. You don't search for them. Like, if you Google, you find it. Yeah, so make it a conscious responsibility on your side to support like the colonial work by working to find the work. Because one thing that capitalism and neoliberalism also does very well is, you know, putting a cover on anything that even remotely looks like it is resisting it. Yes.
So Purity looks like she. Do you want to jump in?
Yes.
Okay, and then we can end this one with Adebayo, because there was also a second question for Adebayo. Go for it.
Yes. I mean, she has said everything, but I also do not want to scare away white people, and then you keep that money from us and say like, oh wow, I'm going to go to Google and look for an organization in Kenya and not find it. So I'm now doing an elevator pitch that you can use as quickly as possible when you are subconsciously thinking about how can I support a proper decolonial organization. You know, think about mostly in terms of grassroots organizations. The grassroots in most of our countries, whether it's Uganda, whether it's Ghana, whether it's Nigeria, are the face of the community. But in most cases, they are the ones actually fighting the colonial kind of mindset. They are the face of the communities. But in most cases, they are not as exposed as so many would think, or are even out there to know how to lobby, how to pitch, how to do all these things. So think about a grassroots. A grassroots is, you know, where you go to a community and you discover this is actually not like anything important. They are living communally. She has talked about, you know, communal living. In Uganda, we have what they call safe houses. Probably even in Ghana, they have them. You know, in Nigeria, they have them. They choose to be safe together. And in those kind of spaces is where they actually know the exact needs of their communities. By living together, their vulnerability makes their mindset understand exactly what they need. So if you think about supporting, yes, think about grassroots. Then the other one is always just be cautious, listen to the needs of the community. Give them a benefit of a doubt if you reach out to their communities, organizations, and things like that. Don't just only go with your own way of how you would love to support, because that's usually what happens with donors. But think about how about having a conversation with them and getting to know exactly what they need and not think on their behalf. Then also we have think tanks. You know, brains those think tanks organize well. She says that, you know, they are colonial organizations, because also we have them, but they are colonial think tanks that we have in terms of setups. And these think tanks, in most cases, are not so well utilized. You know, can I give you an example? You have think tanks in your room right now. AdBio is a walking encyclopedia right there, having everything. You know, AdBio was talking about the new NGO laws in Uganda, you know. And in most cases, these think tanks are not like thought about. Don't go so far away from yourself. Just look around. You will find think tanks that actually gives you exactly, because we know. But in most cases, you don't consult. You think about so bigger things like how the Western world understands funding. It is just as simple as looking out for think tanks. So think about all those three dynamics.
Thank you, Purity. So if we could just now have AdBio close this question, and then afterwards, let's take one round of questions and then leave.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's a very interesting question, and I think a lot of it really speaks to, and I think one thing that even Purity and Awa have spoken to is this idea of returning to community. Mm. Because I think one thing we need to remember about the NGO model is that, like, the NGO model exists as a capitalist tool of the state to circumvent the effects of capitalism, right? So NGOs exist to do the work that the state should be doing. Like, this is not, like, an NGO should not be the one providing you housing. An NGO should not be the one providing amenities and services. The state should be doing that, right? And so the way a lot of these NGOs and the NGO model exists, a lot of it is, you've had capitalism and it's caused all of these problems, and it's like, okay, let's scramble to put band-aids on this. And ultimately, a system that reifies capitalism is not going to fix the problem. All it's going to do is, again, put band-aids on it. And it's not sustainable, right? So I think for me, a lot of that understanding is for us to move back to a space of community, a place that prioritizes community work. And I think even this is something that has different terms in different spaces. So some people call it grassroots organizations and organizing. But these are things that exist. This is an example of something that has come about as a result of something that exists outside of, again, this very capitalist framework. And, like, you will see that even in the way it's organized, in the way, you know, some of, like, it's just, it's a very community-based organizing framework, right? And and these things exist. So an example in Lagos, Nigeria, there's this collective that kind of do this work with queer people, which didn't even start as an organization for queer people, right? And they rented a space and they host parties in that space. So this is something that prioritizes queer joy. They host raves and events. And a lot of the money that they make is not even from tickets, but also just from drinks that people buy when they come to these spaces. And they use that money to facilitate services. They also host and organize, like, entrepreneurship workshops. So they bring people in to come and sell their goods and little, like, market stalls and these things. So, like, there are, and even when you think about, like, mutual aid funds as well, like, you know, we've always been a community that are able to work in community and as communities to provide for each other. And I think a lot of that work is us being able to go back to that space. And it's understanding that, like, these organizations and spaces that, like, are supposed to be meeting material needs of people, right? So this is not just about, oh, we're an NGO that caters to LGBT people. What does that mean, right? Mm-hmm. It's about understanding that they are catering to the material needs of people, and people are able to go into these, and I think that's kind of how we can start to reconceptualize, understand that. And, you know, if you're trying to look for things to look out for, if it's an organization where you're seeing trickle-down politics, where it's like, this organization gives this organization money to give these organizations money to give these organizations, you've missed road. Turn around. You're going in the wrong direction, right? And because a lot of the times you see, it goes back to community work, right? Where it's friends coming together, where it's colleagues coming together, where it's, you know, me and anybody, like me and Purity, me and Aoi, me and coming together and saying, okay, what can we do in this space and time? And I think it's also important to understand, which is why a lot of these registrations and all of these things that they're making us do, it's to circumvent that work, because community work is dynamic, it's fluid. Community work isn't something that stays and sustains itself, right? And you should be looking at organizations that are working towards redundancy. So if it's an organization where you are applying for a job and moving up in your career, and it's a means for you to earn your money, and one question you need to ask yourselves when you're looking at organizations, or even if you're going into organizing, is that if you are working in a space where you're trying to solve a problem, if the problem is your source of income, then to what extent are you committed to that problem coming to an end, right? And I think that's a question you need to ask yourself, but also ask organizations that you're supporting and looking into, right? And I think to answer your question, it's if I've experienced homophobia in Nigeria, and if I've lived in Nigeria and I go back, yeah, I've lived in Nigeria, I was born there, I was partially, largely raised there. My parents live in Nigeria, so I unfortunately can't stay away even if I wanted to. a lot of my PhD research is in Nigeria. So actually for the past 2-3 years, I've largely lived in Nigeria. I've probably been in Nigeria more than I've been in the UK. And yes, I have experienced homophobia. Yes, it can be very exhausting. But I don't necessarily frame it as a condition where I don't want to be there, because honestly, I don't want to be here either. Like, maybe I don't want to be there, but I also don't want to be here. Like, it's one of them ones where you kind of have to pick your poison. But I think my issue with the question, and not with you, but like, I think in the way we frame that question is, it sits with how we look at the problem, and ultimately how we look at a problem determines how we go about solving that problem. So if we're looking at the problem of homophobia and the living conditions in Nigeria as, oh, it's a homophobic country, I think that will determine how people go about solving it, because ultimately you get to a point where people get fatigued, the laws haven't changed, so I'm going to leave, right? However, I think we exist in a space where it's a product of the history of the time of the space, right? So Nigeria is not inhabitable, or me not wanting to be in Nigeria is not because I'm queer or because of the homophobic violence that I might have experienced at some point or the other. It's inhabitable because of the sustained colonial project, right? And how it's still happening. And this is something that came up yesterday in the conversation for whoever was at the panel. It's why the idea of colonialism has not ended. Like, a lot of these people like to talk about this idea of a post-colonial. We don't live in a post-colonial world. Way too fast, sorry. I'm trying to make time, sorry. But yeah, like, we don't live in a post-colonial world.
Maybe count to three.
Okay.
You good?
You good now?
Okay, perfect.
Great, okay. You see how I counted to three? Very demure. I'm gonna be very mindful now. But yeah, so it's... Now I lost my train of thought. Sorry, wait.
Colonial project is...
Right, okay, yeah, sorry. We don't live in a post-colonial world. We live in a post-independent world, right? So a lot of these countries have gained independence, but that does not mean they're not still colonized. And some of it is not necessarily because the colonization has just shifted. Then I'll call it development. Then I'll call it... No, they now call it aid, right? But when you think about how these things manifest and how they're just how... It very much actualizes in that way. So I think it's a reframing of that problem, because when you see it that way, you see that you moving outside of Nigeria because it's homophobic doesn't solve your problem, actually, because all you're doing is moving from the like place where it's affected and you're moving to the eye of the problem. So if anything, you're really just going even deeper when you decide to move, because not only are you no longer in community with a lot of the spaces, but now you are in the UK or Switzerland or wherever, where you're now experiencing racism on top of the homophobia, on top. And it's like, is it not enough? And this is a very good example of something that happened to me yesterday. Like, my host and I went out, and like, I hope they wouldn't mind me sharing this, but like, we got kicked out of a club, right? And when, like, I'm not going to go into the details of the story, but it's because we were black queer people walking in that space. And it's this idea that, like, who's going to kick me out in a club in Lagos? Are you mad? Like, it's even understanding, like, all of those various intricacies. So I think it's a reframing of that problem as not just that this space is inhabitable because it's homophobic, but actually there is a reason that is sustained even in whatever space you go, you are not removed or you're not escaping it. So yeah, for me, I think it's a question of, like, the only way for me to actually be happy is if I'm out of, I don't even mean dead, I mean like maybe move to Mars or something. So people don't think this, I don't want this to go grim. I don't mean like die or anything, I just mean like out of the world, but like, you know, maybe Mars or, I don't know.
So
I don't mean dead.
So what you're saying is, has me briefly thinking about a friend of mine. We call him Mboga because he's from the UK and Ghanaian, and he's also queer. And I remember we were having drinks in Kumasi, and we're just discussing like how he would spend 6 months in the UK whenever he was tired of the homophobia in Ghana, and then another 6 months in Ghana when he was tired of the racism in the UK.
Oh my gosh.
And so the plane ended up becoming his home to some degree. Right. And so maybe you don't have to go as far as Mars. Maybe.
Yeah, but those planes are uncomfortable because it's most likely going to be economy. I'm not.
If we could just, why don't we take a round of questions and y'all can answer whatever question resonates with you, and then we can wrap up. So this is your last chance to ask a question. Going once, going twice.
It's a really basic question, but I would really like to hear how you define queerness, because we talked a lot about queerness, but I think it's a really like interesting word. And you said before, or if I understood you correctly, that it's important to not identify as queer, but more so queer as an act, and I would really like for you to elaborate on that.
Yes, that's a really big question. Any other questions?
And a device for Afro-Swiss queer people. How to navigate the space and the community for the future. Yeah.
It's not really formulated, but I think it also adds to Nimia's question. So I think what I've been observing in community spaces in Switzerland is that I think there is a lot of division happening internally, because in my observation, I think that people are kind of exhausted because their energy focuses fighting these white constructs. And I was just wondering if any of you who are or have been living in Europe have any insight on that, because I'm actually very, I don't even know the word, I'm just tired of this, how people are not really able to access each other because they're also always having to be in this very defensive state.
One final question here. So far we have, how do we define queerness, advice for Afro-Swiss people, and how to navigate this space to build the community in the future, and a similar question there, but.
So that's a bit of an open-ended question, but as Adebayo had so succinctly put it, that, you know, for example, queerphobia could exist in a place like Lagos, but it doesn't nullify queerness or its significance there. And at the same time, the concept of not finding your place there, but also not finding your place here. And relating this to the whole thing about pinkwashing, colonialism in Palestine, and the whole argument about, you know, Islamism and queerphobia and all this shit. I guess my question is, what do you say to white people who keep nagging us that it's okay to live in a colonized place as long as it's queer friendly?
Sorry.
So I open the floor to whomever would like to just jump in. And you can answer whichever questions you want to, but I'll try to make sure that each question is touched on. Yeah.
I want to answer the question on insights and community building. Mm-hmm. So, from my experience organizing in Ghana and doing the colonial work, one of the distinctions, and I would say one of the main characteristics of the colonial work, is how much we give each other space to learn, right? I have had a lot of occasions where people have misgendered me, used the wrong pronouns, and had expected me to react a certain way. And I just didn't, because like I knew that they are, you know, colleagues who would never do that intentionally. And I say this to make this like all of us our responsibilities, that we have to maybe like give each other a little bit of space to make mistakes. And that's not to say that that space for making mistakes, you know, if anyone has been given that space, they take advantage of it to, you know, be bigots. I think we are all learning. There's so much that we can learn from each other. There's so much that once we come, we decide that we are giving each other like that allowance. There's so much that we can do together in solidarity. And so, yes, please let's just give each other some learning space. And if you have been given that space, I want to urge you to not misuse it, because like there are people who also would intentionally continuously misgender you because they know that, oh, I don't mind. Or I won't get mad. So they will continuously do it. Then you are harmful and you are not community. But if I also get mad at you for wanting to know, say, my pronouns and asking me, then I am also not someone that you would want to be in community with, right? So we give each other the space, we give each other, you know, we assume that it is not intentional, and it is a journey that we are on. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Purity? And also we have 9 minutes left.
Defining the word queerness, I think when Adebayo was introducing queerness, they said that queerness is what you do, not who you are. Queerness, these terms are actually like defining these kind of terms are actually so much of a colonial kind of construct. So I really would allow somebody else to answer that, because I mean, I wish there was no, like I keep telling people that what if, when she's talking about, you know, how people are misgendering us, I always tell people that what if we didn't even have any pronouns, like what if I woke up and I said my gender is black and that's it, and just you look at me and what you see is what you get, and you allow me to actually just be who I am. Like sometimes it's really exhausting how we have to define and define and define and define, but then that's what it is now. But then when it comes to fighting white constructs or, you know, community building or having us burnouts in our communities and the fights that happen, you know, I always tell my community, I go through that. I am a leader of trans refugees, and everybody is wounded. And I'm wounded too. So you cannot be wounded and heal each other if it has only depend on you. We just have to think about delegating our tasks in so many different ways. But that's if when services are available for us. That's why solidarity is quite very important. You know, we were raised by a community. Every neighbor was a friend where I come from. And because everybody is lonely in these countries that we are in Europe, it also manifests in our queer spaces. Like, I go for functions, like I go for hangouts in Sweden here, and it's like there are a million rules. They're like, oh my goodness, like, when will people be people? You know, so if that is what is happening, how will you even have time to even handle conflicts? If somebody has a conflict, somebody, nobody's talking to nobody. Like, they will actually, like in Sweden, if you want to avoid a conflict, just make sure that you make somebody a little bit sad. They will just avoid you, and you will never see each other, like how it happens with neighbors. I don't like, actually, my neighbors really make me really happy, because they never, every time they see me, you know, entering a building, they check the other direction. But if we are wounded, and then toxicity also happens in all forms of human beings, you know, and we keep forgetting that. So these kind of fights, in most cases, is just because we are not able to delegate. And for some of us leaders, we have taken it upon ourselves that we are the ones to heal our community. No, everybody should have a role to play in this, and what we cannot actually heal, we also accept. You know, I always tell my friends when I see a mental health challenge somewhere, and I'm like, I'm sorry, darling, I am not able to help, but we can ask for help somewhere else. And that's how I navigate things that I'm not able to control. Then when it comes to burnout, for some of us, we don't even have a privilege of taking time off, and we say it's peaceful. But if we started looking out what I talked about, looking out for ways of making sure that everybody has a part to play, probably maybe we shall be taking away from everybody. But then now that activism is more of a career, like, you know, I have a degree in human rights, so you can't wait for human rights again to be violated and then you actually have a career. So if we choose to look into our sense of community, not a career, we would be supporting our friends. You know, we would be having family gatherings in our queer families and things like that. We would not have events where it is almost like we are in a church or in a movie where we are acting, everybody is looking aside and aside, you know? So that's what I could say about this. Sorry, I know time is not a good friend.
So last but not least, Adebayo, you have the unenviable task of answering, giving a word of advice to the tired people in Europe, and also linking this to the idea that you should just be okay with being tired because you're free from queerphobia in the global south. Go.
Thank you. I think very quickly, just to address your point about how I define queerness, I think, I see queerness definitely as a liberatory sense of being that goes beyond being LGBT. So for me, queerness is not synonymous with LGBT. And quite frankly, I think queerness is a category that encompasses people beyond who you have coitus with, right? Or who you choose to have sex with. I think a lot of it, yes. being LGBT, being queer goes beyond who you have sex with. So a lot of it sits within a framework that even people outside of same sex can be queer.